Welcome to Ingrow Podcast, Ingrow Radio 4.0. This is the annual Brian's sleep deprivation radio hour. So if I say anything untoward, it's definitely
just don't call me Dave.
Well, Johnny Bacon is not here. Anyway, he's unavailable.
Right.
He's training for a secret mission in Japan. I shouldn't have said that out loud. See?
Basketball. He's covering basketball, everybody.
20 seconds in, and it's already like, oh.
This is why we don't trust you with anything.
CIA secrets.
Yeah.
So, Notre Dame, huh?
Yeah. You want to go right into Notre Dame? Cause
well, I don't have anything else to talk about.
You don't want to talk about the season preview at all? Like, well, nothing you learned? Nothing you struck you as you were putting all this together?
I was struck by how long it was and how many hours of sleep I was not getting.
Right. Well, that happens every year.
It does. Anyway, Notre Dame.
Notre Dame. Actually, I'd like to talk about our sponsors first, if that's okay.
Oh, yeah, that is a good idea.
Yeah, they're lovely, by the way. They're Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Home Sure Lending, The Residence in Ann Arbor Downtown, University of Michigan Alumni Association, Human Element, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, the Ann Arbor District Library, they're new now, and Michigan Law Grad.
Excellent. Thank you. So it hasn't even gotten to game day, and Notre Dame has already executed a nefarious act.
What's that?
Carl Grapentine posted on Facebook that Michigan will not be allowed to do a pregame show at all.
Are we still sending the band?
The band is going to be there, but they're going to be doing a pregame show, and they're going to be exiled to the very top rows of the stadium, which is actually good for them in terms of watching the game.
Right, but and not getting run over by Devin Gardner.
So it's they've managed to fire up the rivalry danders before anything has actually happened. It's just, I don't know, it just seems so petty and sad, like
kind of like Notre Dame.
Like they say they don't have enough time to like have do the pregame show, so like Michigan can just go on a little earlier. And like if I'm going to see Notre Dame at Michigan Stadium, if I'm going to see basically any major non-conference opponent, I want to see the band. Like
yeah.
I can go without seeing the Michigan State band. I don't need to see that.
But
like, if Notre Dame's going to come, I want the Notre Dame band.
Michigan State's band is like the one thing I like about Michigan State. That and they have good ice cream. But that's like, even the Michigan State band is like awesome and fun to watch. And that's kind of part of the football. That's why this upsets me, because Notre Dame, you know, you're not like sticking it to Michigan by like putting the band up in the corner.
It's like if anybody should know about the pageantry of college football and how important it is for the experience, it's Notre Dame.
It is, and you know, I don't know if you got to read the preview because you were doing your own previews.
I did not.
Okay, well that's how I got to sneak in.
I know absolutely nothing about Notre Dame as a football team except the stuff I've been reading.
Well, while you were away, I called Jack Swarbrick a litigious orangutan.
Wow.
I have strong feelings on him, and they come from friends of mine who are big Notre Dame fans.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, they feel very Brandon-esque about him.
I've read that on message boards where they're the corporatization of the whole experience. It doesn't go over well with some of the diehards, but that's just kind of par for the course everywhere.
I for them, I don't think it's just corporatization. I think it's this petty kind of thing that goes on all the time, and we're not the only rival he does it to. You remember when like they canceled the rivalry by giving Dave Brandon a letter at like the last possible second?
But that was like, I mean, he's asking for that. Just like, hey, buddy, here's a letter.
Sure, fine. I mean, you can do that to Dave Brandon, but you're doing it to your fans and you're doing it to Michigan fans.
Well, there's always a big conversation in the Notre Dame fan base of whether they want this game to happen at all, which seems very strange to me because it's just, for me, like, I'm very glad to have it back. I know it's going to be in the middle of the conference football season the next time it comes. I don't really care about that. I just want to see Notre Dame on the schedule.
It bothers me that it's, like, right after the Penn State game. Like, yeah. There's a, you know, but, yeah, it's, I mean, to have it back, you know, we'd rather play it, you know, early in the season every year. Like, have a MAC school and then play Notre Dame. That should be the tradition. But you know, just to get it back going. And that's what they had to do. They had to go to Notre Dame, like, hat in hand and say, hey, please, our fan base really wants this. Your fan base really wants this. And Swarbrick was like, well, I have to show that I'm really good at deal making, so let me see how I can screw you.
I don't think Michigan went back hat in hand. Like, they could, they scheduled Texas, they scheduled Oklahoma.
So we should have gotten Bacon, because I think he got the story that that was one of the things on Harbaugh's list to come here.
Was to get Notre Dame back on the schedule?
Right. Because Jim Harbaugh is a bona fide college football fan.
Sure.
And every bona fide college football fan was mad as hell when this went off the schedule.
It is just kind of this early season tentpole game. And so many of the games it throws off are either amazing football games or amazingly bad football games that are still kind of remarkable for being
right.
what they are. Like the Hoke game where he's got Devin Gardner in the fourth quarter and gets Devin Funches injured in the fourth quarter of like a 31-0 game. The Jimmy Clausen game.
The pillow fight. Do you remember the 2007 one you're talking about?
I don't
know. The 2007 one after we'd had Armageddon and post-Armageddon.
Oh, yeah. And no, I was talking about the Jimmy Clausen one where, you know, they just have no offensive line whatsoever. There's that famous photo of like four different guys.
Yeah.
Same time. And there were the other 38-0, just absolute hammering.
There were multiple 38-0s.
And then when you don't get these just absolute hammerings that are interesting in their own way, you get, you know, like the Denard after Dentist game. You get like the 500 total yards in Notre Dame Stadium Denard game.
Tate Forcier going full moxie.
Yeah, so they're always, I feel like Michigan Notre Dame is appointment viewing for anyone who's like a real college football fan, and it's a disservice to like both programs to like not have it on the schedule. Like they're playing Purdue instead of Michigan. Like Purdue,
first they said it was because they have to do an ACC schedule. They had to do 5 ACC games to like take an ACC bowl spot. I guess that's the deal. But I mean, that's Swarbrick.
That is the deal. Like they are 5/9 of an ACC team.
So drop Navy. What is that rivalry doing for Notre Dame anyway?
Well, I mean, you get to beat Navy most of the time.
Right. If I was a Notre Dame fan and they were keeping Navy on the schedule and dropping Michigan and Michigan State,
Notre Dame has this thing where they feel like they have this special connection with Navy. It's a good rivalry for them because it's like, oh, it's special. We love this rivalry, and they didn't lose for like 40 years, and that makes it really easy to have a rival.
Right.
Like, oh, they're our rival.
I get that. Like how Michigan fans were bummed when we're locked into a schedule with Nebraska, and we're like, our first reaction isn't, oh, that's not fair that we have to play Nebraska and Scott Frost. Our reaction is, what about Minnesota?
Right. Yeah,
we have a jug with them.
I think that's a pretty good comparison. So like, except, you know, for Notre Dame, they haven't had this, like, sometimes we don't play them for a while.
Right.
I mean,
they don't have a conference. Maybe we should consider that.
Well, I mean, they do have a conference now.
Yeah, sort of. They're like 1 foot in.
Well, all their non-revenue sports are in the ACC. I mean, that was the trade-off they had to make to get like a real home for their basketball.
Well, and the hockey team's in the Big Ten, which, by the way, is awesome.
Well, yeah, but that's just a special case because there's no other place
and,
for them
and
really
the football
be.
So two out of the three main sports are a special case and the rest of the sports are the rest of the sports.
Well, I mean, Notre Dame hockey is a special case. Hockey is a special case.
Yeah.
So like a couple of the major hockey conferences don't actually exist except as hockey conferences. So it's a different world and it's one where
That as it may, Notre Dame fans travel to come see Michigan hockey. Michigan fans are going to travel to see Notre Dame hockey, and that's a cool and that they didn't have to like push that one. They're new. We're not having that relationship with Maryland, and they joined our football conference. Anyway, we're getting off that.
Maryland doesn't have a hockey team.
No, football wise, it's too natural. Michigan and Notre Dame should play each other in everything every year. Period.
Man, that curling.
Yeah.
Intense.
Michigan and Notre Dame fans would fill a curling rink.
Possibly.
Yep.
So let's talk about the actual team itself.
Notre Dame's team itself? That team?
Yeah, we already did the Michigan season preview podcast.
They're like Michigan, except for without a quarterback, because we have one of those now.
All right, well, could you Could you elaborate on that?
All right. So they offensively last year was very weird for them. They had that 4-8 season, which really was not 4-8. They had some really unlucky games to get to 4-8.
Yeah, they were almost, I think, an S&P top 25 team, and they were 4-8. I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, coaches agree with, you know, the lowest level fan about, no, it's just the record. And that was a soul-searching moment for Kelly, who stopped running the offense himself, brought in an OC from Memphis, brought in a DC from, I forget where he got him from. But he brought in two good coordinators. Who are up-and-comers, and gave them the reins to their things. The defense, you know, remember it used to be that that 3-4 soft cover 2 that, you know, we used to just pass underneath. That was gone. They scrapped that for like a Don Brown-style 4-2-5. And offensively, they were 60% run last year, which was not necessarily just the OC, but it was the OC and the fact that, like, they had a really good running game. They had, like, two top 10 draft picks on the left side of their line and a running back who is in the NFL as well. Those guys are all gone. So they still have the quarterback. Brandon Wimbush can run, but he can't throw. And he's going to have to because he's going to be the entire offense. Their running back situation actually looks pretty bad right now.
So elaborate on that. One of their starters, well, the protected starter is out till week 5, and they have freshmen and redshirt freshmen competing. And from reading the articles that get posted on 24/7, there was an article on The Athletic. It doesn't really sound like there's a whole lot of belief that any of these guys that they have available are going to be particularly good, especially in week one.
Yeah. So the guy who's out is Dexter Williams, who was going to be good. He had like 9 yards per carry last year. So I'm kind of glad that we're missing him. But they're stuck. They're going to probably start Tony Jones, who's just like a burly, you know, runs forward guy.
Right.
And
Rutgers is running back last year.
Yeah. And, you know, the kind of things that are getting said, like The Athletic's been having great Notre Dame coverage this year. And the things that are coming out of there are almost like too good. I like wonder when Notre Dame's going to tell them to shut up because they're like too honest about what's going on. And one of the things that like they're not happy at all about Tony Jones and looking for anybody to step up. The guy who's now second string is Jafar Armstrong, who came in as a quarterback. They're converting him to a slot receiver. He's 6'1", 218. He's, like, not running back shaped at all. But,
well, 218 isn't bad.
No, I mean, he's kind of a – he looks like a wide receiver. He okay. looks like a grown wide receiver. He's a redshirt freshman, and he kind of, like, looks more like Steve Breston as a running back. So
okay, but Steve Breston was – I don't know if he was ever 218 pounds carrying a 30-pound weight.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, he was he's that kind of fleet-footed,
sure,
long guy. The other comparison might be like Carlos Brown or something, but I wouldn't even put him there. Michael Shaw?
Okay.
I'm gonna have to go deep, and that's kind of the point. I think you said in one of the your previews that if Christian Turner had chosen Notre Dame instead of Michigan, he might be the starter right now, and I think that's accurate. So yeah, that's their running game.
And then their wide receivers are all just the same guy.
Yeah.
They're all like 6'5" quasi tight ends who go post up and pick up fades and the like.
Literally their two starting receivers are both 6'4", one's 227 pounds, one's 228 pounds, and they're both juniors.
Okay.
And the one who was scaring me is not the one who was officially starting last year. So they're both just, yeah, they're gonna get down, they're gonna box out. They don't get a lot of separation. But they don't really need to. They'll just chuck it up in the air. And Wimbush is so inaccurate that, you know, they're not expecting the ball to come right where they want to be anyway. They're just kind of there. And, you know, if there's a safety nearby, they'll just body that guy away.
So it sounds like it's going to be a lot of quarterback-oriented running game. Maybe not the quarterback carrying the ball, but the quarterback, you know, optioning a guy off when he's not carrying the ball. And then if you get a safety creeping up, then you try to hit him over the top. Or maybe even you don't even wait for that, because if you can get a matchup you like on the outside, then I just don't see that working too well, because, I mean, we've seen this cornerback set up against Timmy Cobbs.
Yeah.
And they basically pressed him off the field.
Yeah.
So, like, are these guys going to be able to get off the line of scrimmage? I mean, no disrespect to a couple of these guys, but I feel like that's going to be a battle that Michigan wins a higher percentage of the time than will be comfortable for Notre Dame. And then so what else are you going to do? So if the short stuff is just off the table because Wimbush can't really throw, I mean, you're going to have to run the ball.
Yeah, I think their strategy is going to be like QB power with Wimbush. And they did that a lot of that last year, too.
So what does their interior line look like now that they've lost McGlinchey and
They still have two guys, good guys on the inside. Alex Bars, who you'll remember, Bars, yeah. And Michigan was after him, too. He's pretty good. He gets on NFL draft boards. And the guy who's even higher on, like, PFF really liked him, was their center, Sam Mustipher. I think Mustipher
is a safe one there.
All right.
Are you confident in your pronunciation of Bars?
No. I think like I'm going to screw it all. I'm a very reader, not speaker guy.
Got Bars right. So
well, we're going to get to the tight end, and I don't know how to do that one at all. Cole Kmet.
Yeah. I don't even know.
Same 6'6", 250-pound tight end who flexes out that Notre Dame always has. So the interior line is good on the left side. And the right guard was their right tackle last year, and he's like tackle sized, but
So they bumped the tackle down to guard.
Yeah, and that's because last year the right tackle was splitting time with a true freshman, and the true freshman is now a true sophomore. That's Robert Hainsey. However, Hainsey's been dealing with a calf injury, and you know that guy's got to go against Rashawn Gary, and they've been holding him out of practices like this week.
Yeah, that seems like inauspicious.
Yeah.
I mean, they're also listing him at less than 300 pounds. So if he's going up against a speed-to-power rusher and he's not like 100% hail, that might not go too well for them.
And I think the other tackle is actually a little bit in trouble, too. He's Liam Eichenberg.
Yeah, that's
right. I'm going to go with that one, yeah. Redshirt sophomore, so like you know, this is when you would see him. Came with the right recruiting accolades, and
seems like a reasonable.
Looked terrible in spring.
Looked terrible.
Yeah.
Did you watch their spring game?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
You gave me. This is my first time doing the actual preview, and so I was. And there was nothing to do. Like you
no,
know, nothing
no,
else to watch.
Nobody in the history of MGO Blog has yet watched a spring game
of an
opponent to glean it for information. This is
that's not true because we were all watching the Nebraska game and live tweeting it in our Slack chat because their true freshman was running around having not played football for a year and we were cracking up.
Sure, but that was for comedy value.
Okay,
we weren't trying to extract information.
Well, I wanted to see.
I can't tell if this is above or beyond or just insanity.
Well, all right, this is. I'm a Michigan fan. I don't know if you know this about me. Anyway.
So what is the next one? I don't know what that was supposed to communicate.
I'm kind of insane about football and have a lot of brain that I don't mind wasting on it. That's what a Michigan football fan is.
Someone who's wasting his mind. Yes, that's actually fairly accurate. So they lose Harry Highstand, but this kind of feels like their Wile E. Coyote year where they still are effectively coached by Highstand.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, these guys have been around for a couple years. You know, they've been very, very successful, so they're going to try to continue the way that they've been coaching them before, and they'll probably be pretty successful. So then the question is like, can Michigan's front seven hold up? And that goes back to Aubrey Solomon, and that goes back to Mike Dwumfor. So both those guys are new starters with a lot of arrows that are pointing in the right direction, but they're not established as superheroes like Mo Hurst was.
Yeah, and I'm not going to jump into the hype train up to the point of Dwumfor is going to be Mo Hurst. I think Michigan fans are going to see us get gashed for 6 yards or 7 yards and wonder how the heck that happened because it's been so long since we've seen like Michigan actually have a defensive line that could get that could happen to more than like once a season. But these guys are not going to. If they want to run inside, they're running inside with a running back. I don't think they're going to they're not going to be sending
QB
their
QB ISO, man.
Yeah, they're more QB outside.
Like, if they're worried about getting Brandon Wimbush hurt, they might as well just pack it in already. Because, like, what else is he going to do except be, like, the primary focus of the run game? Like, that's what you put a less than 50% passer out there to do.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't think they can shy away from running Wimbush 25 times in this game.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, when Wimbush is being effective, it's because he can get outside, though. It's not, he's like a very Denard-style runner. You didn't see him
he's
running between the tackles.
225
not, sorry,
pounds.
Not Denard, Devin. Devin. I meant Devin the whole time.
That doesn't make sense either.
He's, why not? Because he's 222 pounds?
He's the thick dude.
He is a thick dude, but he's tall and he is...
He's not that tall.
Striding. I don't know. That's what it reminds
me. Striding.
Striding. That's...
Who doesn't stride?
I don't stride at all.
You don't... Well...
No, I shuffle.
Who on a football field doesn't stride? They're all striding. That's the individual event in a run is a stride.
I mean, you want me to go to platitudes? Like, you know, he covers a lot of ground with every... he's got long legs, and he just runs around people.
Okay.
And if he gets ahead of steam, you know, that's the one thing I was concerned about, was like him coming downhill a little bit and Tyreek Hill having to stop that.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
Fair for that. Fair.
So they'll get a couple chunks with him doing that, and they keep the safeties back, and that's why I think they run outside, by chucking it downfield to the 6'4 guys.
So do they have, like, a slot, or is this more of a just, like, everybody's tall?
No, they have a slot. His name's Chris Finke, again.
That doesn't sound like a very intimidating slot.
He's not. He's 5'10", 180, and he's, like, he's a dealio. He's open. But, you know, when it's Brandon Wimbush and you have a slot receiver who's 5'10", like, his radius is not really large enough.
Sure.
Yeah. And I think they threw a couple passes to him last year that turned into interceptions, and that was it. Like, he was not looking there anymore.
So they don't have a guy like that Purdue dude who can just...
Not that guy. Yeah.
Juke you out of your shorts.
They don't.
They don't. Okay.
They don't.
So they're going to have to, like, earn everything.
Yeah. I mean, Jafar Armstrong is that running back / Breston that
kinda
I was talking
like
about. Yeah.
Jittery kind of guy, but they don't have, like, a guy who's going to turn a bubble screen into an 80-yard pass.
No, like all their stars, all the guys who, like, they have a bunch of guys from, you know, were top 250 recruits,
right.
But that's because they were all huge and
they're just
athletic,
very large people.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the Notre Dame offense. We're going to take a break, come back, talk the other side of the ball, and possibly about potatoes.
Ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
I grew up in a small town of Haslett, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships. And we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Do you like podcasts that aren't about sports? Maybe one's about music or movies or books or Ann Arbor history? Then hoo boy, do we have news for you. The Ann Arbor District Library offers podcasts about all of these topics and more on aadl.org or for streaming on your favorite podcast app. Visit aadl.org/podcasts to check out shows like Undercovers with Martin Bandek, interviews with music and pop culture authors, or the Michigan Theaters podcast, Behind the Marquee. There's the comic book podcast, Super Skull, produced by the crew at Vault of Midnight, and the Ann Arbor history podcast, Ann Arbor Stories. Or check out AADL's newest podcast, Presenting Alfred Hitchcock Presents, an episode-by-episode dive into Hitchcock's popular anthology TV series. If you like podcasts, AADL has you covered. Check out aadl.org/podcasts and find your next favorite podcast today.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 4.0. We are at the Bow Store on Main Street. Do you know, I had a conversation with Rishi when they opened this place up, and I was like, I have a great name. I've never told anyone this before.
Okay.
I have a great name for your store.
Okay.
And I told him.
It wasn't the Bow Store?
It wasn't.
Okay.
I was like, all right, are you ready? And I was like, the Boutique. And he slapped me in the face. It took me like 3 weeks, and then I replayed it in my head, and I was like, I deserve that.
Yes. It just took me less than 3 weeks to decide that.
Anyway, in
was
other
it the, was
sponsor
it the
stories,
boutique or a little boutique?
Oh, my God. I'm not going to slap you on live radio. You're my employee. That's probably illegal. I just want you to know that I want to.
I understand. There's certain things you can't do at work, Urban Meyer.
I think we should talk about hummus, Ace.
You can call me Dave
I'm
yet.
I'm very tired.
You have not called me Dave yet. All right. So, Lantana is back with us again this year. We have our tub of Lantana Sriracha Carrot because that's my favorite one. And I had a little story about Lantana this summer. I was
You're just supposed to tell the story.
I'm just going to tell the story. We were in Colorado, and my sister-in-law is, like, you know, living the beautiful Colorado life in the beautiful suburbs of Golden, and invited, like, their friends who are living even the higher life, and everything there was just, like, the nicest stuff that you can possibly, yeah. Nicest version of every single kind of food you had there. And she pulls out the Lantana hummus, and she's like,
so
you guys.
This is, like, elite hummus.
She thinks that she's going to surprise the Michiganders with this hummus that, like, we can't get out there, here in the sticks of Midwest. And she pulls it out, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that stuff's great. She's like, oh, there's so many flavors, and she's, like, giving the whole spiel. And I'm like, well, you should come on my podcast one time because we sponsor these guys, and we always talk about them.
I got to tell you that, like, they have, like, a strawberry one, and I'm not brave enough to try that.
Oh, I tried it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was in Austin.
Is it, like, sweet? It's got to be sweet.
It's really good. I was a little bit drunk, but we housed that thing.
So this is your life. You just go around getting drunk places and eating large tubs of hummus.
Is there a better life? Anyway.
I can't answer that.
Yeah.
Fairly.
Yeah, I think, like, they're based in Austin, so we were in Austin, and, like, you know, they think they try out new flavors there, so.
Well, that is an excellent segue into the Notre Dame defense.
Oh yeah, they're a lot like strawberry hummus.
That's the joke. That's why we don't explain the jokes. We just make the jokes.
It's funny because I didn't get that.
Is it? Is that
you started you said that, and I looked down at my sheet and looked at the name Jerry Tillery, and I just here's the thing.
About Jerry Tillery, please?
About Jerry Tillery, okay. Yes. Anytime you come across this guy, your brain just freezes.
Okay. So it's like...
He's 6'7", 305.
All right. He's a defensive tackle?
He's a defensive tackle from Louisiana, and he was a five-star.
Okay.
So, first of all, how come this guy didn't end up at LSU? Second of all, how come this guy didn't end up at offensive tackle?
Well, surely there's at least one person in the state of Louisiana who doesn't like airboats.
No.
Like, there's Jerry Tillery, apparently.
No, like, Michigan got a guy from Louisiana once because he didn't go to any camps, and he, like, left a year later?
No, they got, you know, Jeremy Lasur, Anthony Thomas.
Okay.
So there have been, like, Drew Dillio. They get some guys.
Okay.
Not everybody loves airboats.
Not everyone. All right. That's our title. Anyway, Drew Tillery, you know, would have been a, you know, LSU all SEC left tackle. Instead, he's on the defensive line, and he looks like he's a very, very scary dude. And
is it like leverage an issue at all? Because he is 6 foot
seven. That's the thing. He gets pretty low.
Okay.
They had him playing nose last year. I mean, it was an issue sometimes because he's 6 foot seven. There's no way around that.
Why don't we talk about kind of their defense in a more holistic view before we drill down? So,
okay.
So last year they're like S&P 20th or something.
Yeah, I didn't understand the S&P numbers because
they're
27th. Yeah, they're 27th, but they're like ranked right around Indiana. They were like tied with Indiana.
Okay, that doesn't sound very good.
Indiana's defense is pretty good.
Oh, that's
Tom
right.
Tom Allen's
defense.
That's
right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I forgot that they've devolved from chaos team, and they actually.
I know it doesn't.
Like,
it doesn't feel. Maybe we shouldn't.
They had an All Big Ten corner last year, and it's just like something that you have to like actively try to remember.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
So they were a pretty good defense last year, and in like all the ranking stats, they were really high, and then ended up down at 27th behind like Wyoming and stuff. So
I wonder if the like drill down stats aren't opponent adjusted, maybe.
I don't know. Yeah. But they had a tough schedule last year, too. I don't know.
So if the drill down stats aren't opponent adjusted, then. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, but so I think part of it is like things like ISO, PP, like their explosiveness metrics, maybe aren't that important in the grand scheme of things.
Right.
Like, because Michigan's had really good offenses under Don Brown, and then you see the defensive radar that Connelly puts up, and then there's always like. This is awesome at everything, and then yards per pass attempt is like,
yeah,
or like 30 yards per completion.
So their Connelly defensive radar was kind of interesting this year because it looked like a cover two soft defense, like a bend don't break defense.
Like an Iowa defense.
Yeah, and it is definitively not that. What they are is they blitz the linebackers, and your only escape, because their cornerbacks are so good, is to just dump it off and, you know, hope your guy gets enough yak to get the first down. And those are so many of those events that kind of becomes
okay. But they return how many starters from that defense?
I was saying
like eight.
Yeah, it's officially nine, but like it's more like 10.5. There's so many guys that they were rotating in.
Right,
last
I mean,
year.
Like, you know, Michigan has. No, even back who could be.
Yeah, but like last year, their defensive ends were like two old guys who were just solid, and then they were kind of slowly replaced by 2 5-stars. Or 2 4 like high 4-star guys who were like working in like by the end of the season.
Yeah, they have
the young guys
as
were
well
playing.
As you're telling people they've recruited.
Yeah, they well they're all in, like they're all like ranked 250 to 150. They're all like
right. That's not 5-star.
Yeah, well they get a 5-star on something. Anyway, their name's Khalid Kareem. I think is the strong side end.
He's an in-state guy who Michigan passed on.
Yeah,
like he was. Did he decommit? One of them decommitted.
No, you know Dalen Hayes is you're thinking of.
No, Dalen Hayes, Michigan, was just flat out uninterested in.
Yeah, he was the one from Ann Arbor.
Yeah, he's from Skyline, and he couldn't get on the field because he was just injured his whole career. And it was like one of those things where it's like, are we ever going to offer Dalen Hayes? And the answer was absolutely not.
Yep. So he's starting as a true junior for Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And they're both like, you know, if we had good tackles, I wouldn't be worried about them, but...
You're going to be saying that against, like, SMU. It's like, you know, these guys.
No, I'm not going to say that against SMU.
This guy's a 5'11", 600-pound guy. But, you know, if we had good
these guys are both listed at 6'4", 265. They're both, like, pretty fast off the drop, and they'll both kind of bull rush a little bit.
Did they pick up any sacks last year at all, or is this just, like... Like, they don't really seem to have a weak side end on this defensive line. And that's what I'm worried about, is, like... If you're a guy who relies on your power to go through people, I think Michigan can deal with that.
Yeah,
like,
Hayes they thought was going to be. He's just kind of bulked up into like a strong side end.
So they're playing two strong side ends.
Yeah.
Well, that's encouraging.
But they're, you know, athletic ones.
I'm sure that they're quality players.
Yeah.
But like, I don't want to see Yannick Ngakoue out there. You know?
No, I think the more concerning thing in general with them is the Tillery moved over to defensive tackle.
Wait, where was he last year?
Nose. Yeah, they had a 7'7" nose last year. They moved him over to, like, the 3-tech.
Yes, say 3-tech.
All right. I'm using their terminology.
Their terminology sucks.
That's our terminology, too.
Our terminology is different.
Tackle. He moved him over to 3-tech. So
thank you.
Tillery over at 3-tech now means he gets more. He gets to be singled up more. And
you know, people always say that, but like, eh. You know, you can scheme it so that that's not the case as an offense.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not a big deal, I don't think.
Yeah, and then the nose tackle is a guy they've just been bulking up a little bit at a time until finally he's 295 and they can call him a nose finally.
Sure.
And that's the front. It's a, you know, it's not the greatest front. I think that we can actually move the three guys except Tillery.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. The linebackers are more of a problem.
Are they?
Yeah. Don't look at the weights that they're listed at.
I'm looking at them.
Because they're lies.
You can't stop me.
They're absolute lies.
Are they?
They're two safeties. They look like safeties.
They're safeties.
Yeah.
Well, Drew Tranquil is a guy who Michigan, I think they did offer him eventually, but it was kind of too late. But he was kind of a nobody recruit until he went to like Notre Dame's camp. He went to Michigan's camp, and they was like, ooh, this guy's pretty good. But he's basically a Viper.
He is a Viper. Yeah. Well, he was a Viper last year. And he probably could have gone to the NFL this year, but I think he wanted to convince the NFL that he could play weak side linebacker.
So he's not playing Viper. So you got a weak side linebacker who's like,
yeah, he's they moved him inside.
Safety-ish.
Yeah. Okay. And the middle linebacker is already pretty safety-ish too. Now he's up to 240, they say, and he does not miss tackles. So,
well, that's nice.
Yeah, he was the guy listed right behind Patty Fisher when we posted that thing of Patty Fisher not missing any tackles last year from PFF.
I see.
Yeah. And that's a little scarier because Coney is, you know, he's a safety style athlete. So these guys, they're going to come, they're going to knife in, they're going to blitz a lot. And, you know, it could look like Wisconsin last year where TJ Edwards was just, you know, jumping past our guys.
Don't compare these guys to TJ Edwards. That dude's an all-American.
They're NFL players. I mean, they're NFL players. Edwards is great. I called Edwards the best player in the Big Ten. I'm on record for saying Edwards is pretty good.
Indiana level defense, and you're telling me that these guys are TJ Edwards.
They're good, but they're small. So when they're not knifing through, when the knife doesn't work.
Yeah, you get to move them.
Exactly. So when one of these guys actually makes contact with Von Wayne, he's going for a ride.
Going for a ride.
Yeah.
I mean, that pretty much any second level player anywhere in the country
is going
for the same ride.
That's true.
Let's have Onwenu try to move Tillery and then use the other guys against the Gents and the
fair enough. Backer core. Fair enough. Anyway, I think you can crack block them too. But like sure. Again, if they dodge the crack block, then you're in trouble. And if they don't, they're in trouble.
So their secondary took a major hit last year when the cursed Sean Crawford had his third season-ending injury in 3 years. He's torn both ACLs, and I think he blew his Achilles out in between.
Yeah, so he's. I think he's done. I mean, he's done for this year.
He's done for this year, and so the thing about their secondary is they have two returning corners who both Notre Dame people think are very good. They don't really have much. They had Crawford. They thought he was going to be their nickel. And now I don't really know who's going to play there.
They don't. So they have two true freshmen that they can use here. One of the two things that they can do are bring in. Should we talk about the starters first? Because they're really good.
Well, they're not that good.
Julian Love, I was watching him, number 27.
Fine.
He is really. I would put him up there with Michigan's guys.
No.
He is bad.
Come on.
PFF loves him too. I'm not the only one.
No.
Yes. But the Troy Pride is just, he was the guy who was rotating with Crawford last year, but Love is good. 27, you're going to, yeah. Anyway, behind them, they got two freshmen, and one of them's a safety, and one of them's a cornerback. I don't think they want to play the cornerback. I think what they want to do is bring in the free safety who was like borderline five-star again.
He's not a borderline five-star.
Houston Griffith.
Griffith?
Yeah. Do you remember him?
Yes, I do, because he's Howard Griffith's son, and Michigan looked at him, and I'm gonna ballpark his ranking at 183rd composite.
Drum roll.
You keep talking about these guys like they're all five stars, and they are not all five stars.
Okay, let's see where he's at.
Do.
We're interneting here.
Drum roll, interneting.
70th.
70th.
Okay. Top 100.
So not even close to a five-star.
Yeah,
not at all close to a top 30 player.
All right. 70th. 11th cornerback. anyway, they want to, they're making him a free safety eventually. And
I mean, I don't understand. You can look at these numbers and understand what they mean, but you keep saying everyone's a five star.
Yeah, okay. Well, you got me. You got me.
All right.
You're right. You're right. I should
just,
stop
I'm,
that.
I'm just curious. I just want you to say what their actual recruiting rankings are. That's all
I you're right. I put stars next to them instead of, like, you know, knowing the actual numbers. Yeah, okay. I should have done that. Okay. So Griffith is the free safety, and they're going to bring him in at free safety and then move the free safety, who's Nick Coleman.
So they're going to play a true freshman safety, you think, in their nickel package?
Yes.
Okay. That's I mean, it's interesting because, like, how would you...
He was there in spring, so he's not, like, totally unblooded,
sure,
but yeah.
Still.
Yeah.
How do you feel like Michigan should be attacking this defense?
If, like, Michigan could, you know, throw deep on the regular, I would say absolutely. I would say, and...
Oh, I asked you how...
how they should be?
Yeah.
Man, like, I think that's going to be more... No, I've been beating the RPO drum a lot this offseason, but I think that's what you do with these guys. I think that they're going to be very obvious about what they're doing with their linebackers, because they have to be. And that makes them very readable, and you can kind of dink and dunk them all the way down until it's time to gash them with the running game.
You know, I think it's interesting because we've heard a lot of talk about Grant Perry being Michigan's best and most reliable receiver over the course of the offseason.
And they don't pass to him?
Well, I mean, they didn't in the second half of last year, but that, I mean, there's a lot of reasons that receivers didn't get much action the last half of the last season. But, you know, if we're talking about a team that had three solid cornerbacks and didn't really know what was behind them, and now they have two solid cornerbacks and don't really know what's behind them, you know, I think you're looking at Zach Gentry. I think you're looking at Perry as, you know, guys who can get after some of these dudes, especially if, you know, a guy like Tranquil is going to be blitzing and has to check up because, oh wait, the 6'8" guy is running behind my head. Like,
yeah, and they have a new Viper too, so that's another guy that they can kind of exploit with the tight ends. And that was, Michigan should attack everybody with their tight ends because their tight ends are great.
Oh, sure,
and, that's the way to go. But I think you're right. I think the especially
well, these are
nickel,
like,
package. You can
two different approaches. So it's like Michigan could load up and just beef up and be like, all right, small linebackers in tight spaces, we're going to move you. And the other option is to, like, all right, we're going to see how many, if we can get Grant Perry 20 catches.
Well, so it's I mean, the way Michigan's passing offense works, they're very similar concepts. It's make space for the guy in the slot and make sure that he's in a man-to-man matchup that there's no way the defender can win. Perry's going to shake that guy, and the tight ends are just too large for him to cover.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how much gun Michigan runs with because, you know, Che Patterson has probably taken every snap since he was a tadpole from the gun, and now he's at Michigan. I'm sure he can learn to take a drop. It's just, like, is he going to be comfortable doing it in a night game in a road environment? And, like, I feel like, you know, you're looking at a game where spreading people out, and, like, if you could get Higdon one-on-one with one of those linebackers, I think that's a pretty good shot at a...
Oh yeah,
a broken tackle. This might not be a Chris Evans game because the linebackers are pretty athletic and can probably track with him in the open field. But, you know, if you can just get Higdon to one of those guys with a little bit of momentum, I think that's going to be profitable.
What they can do with Chris Evans is neutralize one of those linebackers,
sure,
and
yeah,
get him away from there, and then they can get the matchups that they want. I think that's a you know, an offense we saw a little bit of in the Ohio State game, how they can use both running backs at the same time. And I think that's absolutely something they should be using against Notre Dame because they have some players who are going to really mess up your game if they're around the ball, and some guys who they can exploit.
I mean, they're going to have packages. Like,
yeah,
there's going to be, like, a package for various players because this is the first game of the season. It's a big game, and they've been working all offseason. So I think you're going to see stuff from under center. I think you're going to see jumbo stuff with three tight ends on the field. And they're just going to, like, the first half is going to be like, I wonder if this works. 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 And then the second half, they'll go with the stuff that they felt the best about in the first half. Like, that's, they have a lot of options. Like, going through the season preview, you know, kind of the thing that jumped off the page to me is, like, so you got Perry, you have McCune, you have Gentry, you have two different running backs who are as very established as good players. I mean, there's a lot of potential contributors at those, like, kind of, like, blocky, catchy running positions, and not just as blockers or I mean, there's like dual threats too, right? So
yeah,
it'll be, you know, they have a chance to get some guys really wide open if they roll the right play call at the right time.
I think too, and this is one of my opportunities to look stupid, was Shea Patterson can kind of shake a guy in the backfield and create some room. And I mean, the cornerbacks aren't good, but you know, Michigan's receivers are pretty big too. And if they're going to get those single matchups, which I think they're going to get all game, then you might see a couple of those, you know. We keep using Tate Forsey, and people keep getting upset when we say it. But I mean, those moxie plays where something's breaking down, and like you make something points down the field and make something happen.
That's what it is. All right, we're gonna take we're gonna take a break. We're gonna come back, and we are gonna talk kind of feelings ball about the season in general.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page. And so did I, and we all love MGO Blah. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 4.0 here at the Bow Store on Main Street in Ann Arbor, Michigan. We are talking about the Notre Dame game. We have completed our survey of the Fighting Irish personnel.
Just like my preview, we skipped special teams, actually.
There are special teams to be had. Do you know anything about the Irish special teams?
They have a good punter and a good kicker.
Okay.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yep. And that Dilio guy returns the punt, so I don't worry about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's more of a catcher and run for 7 yards kind of guy.
I don't even think he runs for 7 yards. He just waves his hand.
All right, well, that's one way to return punts.
Yeah.
By not returning them. So I've completed the vast majority of the season preview. Usually it's all of it, but this year we had some hiccups. And, you know, I feel pretty good about the season, but, you know, the tackles are kind of the big flashing issue. And I don't think there's really any mitigation of that from the tackles themselves. I feel like there is mitigation of that from Michigan's offensive approach.
Yeah, that's what I keep telling myself all offseason, really, is we're not the first team to go into a season with bad offensive tackles or with questionable offensive tackles. Lots of teams have survived this, most recently Penn State.
We have to be like the team that has like the most stuff everywhere except offensive tackle in a minute.
Yeah.
You look at the defense, and you got 5 stars and actual 5 stars in various places. And
I mean, there's
Peoples-Jones and 2 running backs. And
fan bases are going to invent something that they're worried about. Like Clemson's going to go into a season with like, oh my god, our right guard's terrible.
It's not
but
true.
It's not. It's not.
It, Clemson is not thinking that. Clemson is thinking Yahoo. That's what they're like. Yeah, we're gonna kill some people this year. Literally murder them on the field.
Yeah, with that defensive line, they probably will. But anyway, let's talk about Michigan. They're it's, you know, that was our problem in 2016 too. We just had the offensive line problems that were inherited, and it feels like it's so hard to climb out of this hole because no one can redshirt and. Yeah. It doesn't. The guys aren't developing going to the NFL.
The worst thing I thought about this entire offseason when I was like, oh my God, what if Mason Cole had redshirted? I mean, and like, you know, you're probably getting that guy back because he's like a 3rd round pick and it comes from, you know, some money. He's not like hard up.
So, yeah.
Like, I think there's a pretty solid chance that 5th year Mason Cole is on this.
Offensive linemen tend to stick around.
Yeah. And like that just changes everything. And so why is Mason Cole not on this roster? Well, Michigan needed him to start at left tackle as a true freshman. And he wasn't good. He was bad.
Yeah.
He was good. He was really, really good
for a true freshman. And for that 2014 line, he was actually decent compared to some of the guys who are on that line.
But that's because Michigan couldn't recruit sufficient offensive linemen for like going on a decade now. So the entirety of this interior line didn't redshirt. And that's, you know, it's just a huge difference. Like if Ben Bredesen is a redshirt sophomore instead of a true junior, his career just feels enormously different.
Yeah, he's Matt Lentz, who's like, you know, the guy who pops up as a sophomore after Jeff Backus and Hutchinson are gone, and you're like, okay, this guy's fine. And then he's all Big Ten a couple of years, and you know, that's a career. That's how you get this train of guys. And that's what's been concerning me. It's not just short-term. It's not just like this year where the team could actually make a run except for they got this glaring hole that they have to scheme around. It's next year. Now you've got Jalen Mayfield not getting a redshirt this year, most likely.
Well, with the 4-game rule, I think he's got a better shot than he would have otherwise. So if you're the number 2 left tackle and you stay the number 2 left tackle, then how many – like,
because they need him to start next year.
I mean, you're not going to have him come in garbage time except when there's garbage time. And if there's only 4 games of garbage time this year, then you get the sort of like natural redshirt effect.
True. And I mean, the reason they had that rule is because teams were getting guys in for 4 games anyway.
Right. Yeah.
But I mean, like
remember
that
the Rutgers, the 78-0 Rutgers right. game where like Sean McEwen's playing. And I'm like, what does that happen? What is going on?
Right.
It's like, oh, we're going to gin up an injury for him after this game. And then he's going to be a redshirt freshman anyway.
So right, and they started the rule because every team was doing that, and I'm sure the NCAA was like, fine, here, just play some freshman 4 games. Well, we don't care which games, just
this
whatever reason.
It's just a waste of effort trying to parse out what's what there. But
right.
So anyway, back to the team at large. Like it, basically everything except tackle and punter looks pretty good to amazing.
Yeah, just punter, like Brad Robbins has been injured, and I think that's why you're having the...
Well, Brad Robbins wasn't, you know, really tearing it up at the end of last year.
Yeah.
He punted 6 times for under 35 yards a punt in the bowl game.
Yep.
And then they put in Will Hart.
But he was...
And Will Hart's punt went 35 yards.
So Will Hart's
not... This makes me feel bad. I feel bad about this.
So they maybe shouldn't punt this year, except for they're going to have to because they're going to get sacked... a million times, and it's fourth and 26.
Right, and they do like shape up as a field position team, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's going to be a lot of running. They're going to try to keep Shea Patterson from, one, getting exploded, and two, from getting pressure and turning the ball over. So they're going to want to punt. And they're going to want to win those punting exchanges that are going to be rife across the season. So if they can't punt, man, not good.
It's such a weird problem for Michigan to have, because, like, we've had punters going back forever. When's the last bad punter we had?
Other than last year?
Yeah. Like, not like, you know, a superstar. I'm not talking about, like, Hagerup shanking a couple in between, booming him 70 yards.
Was kind of a bad punter, because he would do that.
He was an erratic punter, but he would also have just, you know.
And I feel like just overall he was bad. Like, he had a year or two where he was good, but there was a year or two where he was not.
I take
your point.
Yeah.
That, like, Hagerup was an outlier. And usually, like, you get a kicker and you're like, I have no idea if
this guy's one doubted his talent. Hagerup had talent. Right. Yeah, you could see why he was there.
Like, a highly touted punter. Like, that guy works out 99% of the time. Because it's not like you have to put it through some uprights.
Yeah.
You just have to punt it a long distance.
Right. And so he also had a few good punts at the beginning. Like,
they
when he came in.
They should have got an Australian guy. They should have got a grad transfer from Australia.
I think something soured them on it, and I don't want to bring up what.
That's not Australia's fault.
Are you kidding? Harbaugh probably sunk the entire. He hasn't gone there again.
I think we didn't get
Daniel Faley. This is man's an anti-Australian now because of that.
I feel like we would know if Australia had been sunk by Jim Harbaugh.
No, I think that someone had to tell him that, so he went to, like, you know, try to. Anyway, the bad punter thing might be an injury, is what I was trying to get at. That he was punting him fine, and.
Oh, so he gets injured, and then he punts poorly at the bowl game, and now he's still injured?
I've been dealing with some. I mean.
Not buying that one.
I've never seen a punter start punting 10, 20 yards less than his average out of nowhere, because he was punting further than that in high school. There's tapes of him doing it. He showed up at the punting camp and the top punter in the country.
He was kind of a late riser, so I wonder if his punting skills were ramped up at these camps, but he wasn't, like, consistent like that over the course of his high school career. There is a guy that Michigan got whose name I completely forget, who took a post-grad year, so he's a little bit older than your average freshman.
Okay.
And Michigan, he's a punter. He had a 46-yard average in high school last year. And he and Will Hart are the guys who are kind of fighting out for it at this juncture.
Oh, he had a funny name, too. I know what you're talking about.
It was a slightly unusual name.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's pointing at him and laughing because of his slightly unusual name.
Hey, I literally wrote the article about Michigan funny names. I know funny names.
Not like his name is Greedo Alcatraz, which would be a pretty funny name.
That would be a great name.
Would you like some more funny names?
Yeah. Tell me all of the funny names that you know. Let's do gimmicky top five funny names that Brian can think of off the top of his head right now.
That's the old
while I search the roster for this mystery punter.
One.
All right.
I put him in the... He's in the post. I called him an actual...
George Catteran.
That's not a funny name at all. But anyway, he averaged 46 yards a kick in high school. Took a post-grad year, so might be a little bit closer to the field. Like, if Robbins is out and Will Hart is punting like Will Hart punted last year, that's a guy who you could see.
Okay.
So maybe there's hope. And they brought in that Moody kid.
Yeah. He's a leg, by the way. He's not going to be a short-range, like, accuracy kicker. He's the guy they brought in to be the new Fug before they got the Fug rule ruined.
Right. Well, I mean, he had 3 50-yard field goals in high school last year, and that is off a tee, so you got to make allowances for that. But he's got apparently has a big leg. Now, actually, let me clarify. Not 3 50-yard field goals, 3 55-yard field goals.
Okay.
So that's some distance. And if he wasn't a great high school punter. He was, like, basically punting at the same level that Robbins was last year. But the interesting thing that I saw on 24/7, Zach Shaw wrote an article. And he went back and he looked at, like, the top 10 punters from a particular year. And the ones who played as freshmen barely beat out Brad Robbins' average. So they were, like, 41.5 or something.
So punters improve that much?
And then the second year, they had like a plus 3 or 4 net average. So, like, that gets you to average-ish, even if Robbins, one, remains healthy and becomes healthy and improves at kind of an average rate. Maybe it is just, like, freshman punters.
Punters are the receivers of special teams?
Punters just maybe they are also freshmen sometimes.
Yeah, I there must be much more to punting than we understand because I've been a football fan a long time. To me, it looks like kicking a ball really hard.
Well, I mean, it is that. I don't want you to think it's not that.
No, but like, yeah, it's. I'm sure there's like a lot to. There's probably levers involved.
But anyway, those are the two like outstanding problems with the team that I think could crop up. I mean, trying to find a big issue in the rest of the team is like, you know, they have a good backup center, they have a good backup guard. Both of those are the same person, but you know, they have incredible depth in their secondary. I'd be fairly confident with any of the backup safeties coming in. You know, I'm fairly confident with many of the backups in the front seven. You know, another wide receiver injury would be pretty bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, other than that, it's just those two things that would hold Michigan back from having a season to write home about.
Now, here's a more fun question to ask. You've written a bunch of these season previews. You've gone through a bunch of years now. How does this team compare to some of the previous ones that you've?
Well, let's tackle that, the positive side.
Yeah.
After the break.
Okay.
Is your online store sluggish, outdated, underperforming? You may be suffering from chronic crappy website disorder. One in three online stores built by your brother's friend's nephew currently suffers from chronic crappy website. But now, there's hope. Introducing Human Element. Huel has helped hundreds suffering from CCW to turn their online stores around, creating fast, secure, and engaging online experiences that turn visitors into customers and put products back at the top of their search engine game.
Before Huel, I had abandoned carts, browser errors, and poorly animated GIFs. Now, with Huel, I can focus on what I'm actually good at, running my business.
Jeffrey, would you be a deer and pull the Ferrari around?
Side effects may include increased traffic, customer conversions, better ROI, compliments, elation, and early retirement. Why live with the disappointment of chronic crappy website disorder? Speak to your Human Element consultant today to see if Huel is right for you.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Thank you. Welcome back to MGO Radio 4.0 at the Bow Store on Main Street. I am Brian Cook. This is Seth Fisher.
Hey.
Sorry, I forgot your last name for a second there. I'm very tired.
I understand. I've seen a lot of content out of you lately.
So you were asking, like, how does this team compare to, you know, previous teams I've done previews for? You know, on defense, it feels unprecedented. Like, all they need to have hit is, you know, a five-star sophomore defensive tackle who became a starter midseason last year, which that's our good pattern. And then the guy that started getting this is Mo Hurst hype before anyone even needed to have a new Mo Hurst. Like, he was having hype about this, like, when he was a freshman 2 years ago. And, you know, Madison's like, this guy reminds me of Mo Hurst, but he's bigger. And I was like, what? Shut up. And
yeah.
I just feel like there are convincing hype and there's unconvincing hype. And, you know, both of those guys are tracking really well in the convincing hype territory. And then, so if those guys come through, you know, you back those guys up with Brian Monet. You back those guys up with Carlo Kemp, who's a third-year player, and Lo Marshall, who, you know, if he's no good, he won't play. And you've got...
They're talking about him being up beyond Kemp.
Yeah, they've been talking about him playing, though, for like 3 years.
He must be
the nicest guy in the world.
He does, because it's the third position he's been hyped at.
Yeah, and like every offseason, it's like, this is it for Lo Marshall. He's really going to be a guy, and I'm really happy for him. And I'm like, all right, I've heard this before. I would let this guy date my daughter, but but I just don't know if he's going to get on the field, you know?
Insider thing out, too. My brother's friends with his high school coach. They went to state together, and the high school coach adores him, too.
So?
Yeah.
He was just like the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah. And didn't adore Malik McDowell as much.
Sure. Well, that's obvious.
And
if you look at, you have a set of defensive ends that could be the best in the country. You get Devin Bush back. You get Khalik Hudson back. You have three all Big Ten level cornerbacks coming back. And, you've also got sophomore Ambry Thomas. Like, the defense should be a top five defense. The defense should be a top three defense. And the only reason I won't go any higher than that is because Alabama and Clemson exist.
Right.
So you can't really say, we're going to be better than those guys. But other than that, like, you just write up your season preview and you're like, five. That one's a four. But it's...
who'd you four?
Metellus got a four.
Okay.
And Cannell got a 3.5 because he missed a lot of tackles.
All right.
And then, like, the linebacker spot got like a 4.5 because...
What?
Well, I mean, so you've got two inside linebackers. You've got a new starter. You don't know exactly, like, how he's going to play. You can expect him to be good because there are...
two possible All-Americans there.
Well, so Viper gets filed separately, so that was a 5.
Okay, okay.
5.
Yeah.
And then on offense, like, you know, it's rare to have two running backs who you think are legitimately established as upper-tier players. And Michigan does have that in Evans and Caron Higdon.
That's something we've been lacking a long time. Two really good running backs.
When's the last time that, you know, Michigan really had two co-starter-type running backs?
Co-starters? Oh.
I think it was BJ Askew and Chris Perry. And one of those guys was a fullback.
Yeah. I mean, there were years like when Brandon Miner and Carlos Brown were like co-starters, but not great.
And, you know, that's like a situation where, yeah, Brandon Miner is a worthy starting running back, and Carlos Brown is a guy who can get 150
because
carries.
Because Brandon Miner is like bits of him are falling off, and someone else needs to carry the ball. But yeah,
that he didn't like jump off as like, oh, that guy could probably play in the NFL.
But even the year, even Askew's senior year, Perry was not Chris Perry. Like,
this for an Askew was just Askew. So like, that's more like I have a half a starter and not two starters. But
you can go back to like Wheatley and the guys that he was playing with because they had stacked backfield back then.
Yeah, I think it's.
You're gonna have that's where I can go back to and like, well, and the like '97 team had Chris Howard and A-Train and what was his name again?
But
Cass Tech kid from number 33.
Clarence Williams.
So
Clarence Williams and Howard were legit co-starters, but like, neither of those guys was that interesting to the NFL, and I feel like Caron Higdon can easily play himself into a second day pick.
Yeah,
and Evans, you know, maybe he's got a little bit more of a path to go, but he's also a junior.
Modern NFL uses those guys a lot more. There, we talked about an article this offseason about that.
I mean, the only thing is, like, Michigan actually has to, like, use him like that.
Well,
which you saw flashes of late in the year, but they haven't really used him as a receiver.
Maybe they weren't doing it because he would use an NFL flight, and now
I mean, they weren't doing it because they didn't have the quarterbacks to do it. So I think it'll be
interesting. Yeah, they needed the running back to stay in and help protect, which might also still be an issue.
Well, I mean, if you're flinging Chris Perry into the flat, he's taking someone with it, and then you don't have to pick him up. Chris Evans. That's what I'm sorry. Thank you.
Yeah.
But it is a. It is a very deep team in almost all spots, except the places where it's very, very not deep.
Yeah. So there's certain guys that I'm pretty excited about that have not seen a lot of play yet. And I think that they're going to shape the season just as much because, like, Uche we've talked about. I don't think fans are really latching onto that yet, but they will. I think that guy's going to be in for, like, double-digit TFLs this year. And people are going to see some of those plays are going to stand out to people. And Quiddy Paye, I mean, they moved Kemp inside, which, you know, Kemp's future was always going to be at defensive tech, at three tech. But the fact that they moved him away from a position that's not easy to play, and they have Quiddy playing behind Rashawn Gary, they believe in that guy. So that's, there's a lot of guys that they have on this team that we're not even talking about who are going to be really good.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, especially, you know, if you look at the guys who are supposed to be receiving passes. Like, how much do we know about Sean McCune in a functional pass offense? Or Grant Perry, or...
And Zach Gentry averaged 11 yards per target.
12.
12.
Round up.
12. 12. All right, in that offense.
You hear the music?
Yep.
We're coming out. We're running out of time. We need a score prediction.
Score prediction for this one?
Yeah.
I said 19-11 because I think you said 19-11. I went on DKA.
75-0. Let's go.
38-0. Thank you for listening to the MGO Radio 4.0. This is Seth Fisher with Brian Cook, and I'm not really good at these little outro things, but go Blue, beat ND.